You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show, which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us today is Dr. Gregory Rocha. Dr. Rocha is a good friend of the station, also with the Political Science Department, and we're here to talk about, gosh, there's a lot of things to talk about as far as politics goes, national, state, and also city politics, and pretty soon we're going to be talking also about mayoral politics. So, Greg, thank you very much for being with us here today.
And thank you, Louis.
And it was not too long ago that we discussed a little bit about some of the issues that face President Obama and some of the issues that face lame duck presidents. In Thursday's El Paso Times, there was a story that Congressman O'Rourke decided to side with the Republicans on a certain issue.
I think it was about the budget. And Louis, believe it or not, I think after this, all this that went on with the sequester, that and people trying to look back and figure out what ultimately came of this, and how it is that I think there's the general consensus that we've seen something that just went off the rails when it wasn't supposed to, that now people, and that is particularly elected officials, the president and the Congress, are trying to get back on track somehow and at least get something done and so forth. So we saw the passage of that legislation. But along with that, we also saw other things like the president meeting with members of Congress, and he's going to go or may have already gone to the Senate for lunch with the senators. And so there is this effort, I hope, to try to build some rapprochement between the White House and the Congress and try to move past these partisan differences. And I know, Louis, kind of on a related note, how many times we've talked, whether on air or between us, about Lyndon Johnson and how it is that he constantly was in contact with people, almost to the point of driving everybody else crazy. But that was part of his legislative brilliance, that he would talk to anybody about anything, anytime, and all related to politics. Well, you know, we don't seem to have that right now. We have these two political parties that are so far removed from one another. And again, maybe we're trying to get back here, which kind of gets back to Congressman O'Rourke and his effort, maybe, again, to try to help in his own way. Again, as a first-year legislator, he's not going to have much say at all about this, but his actions speak, I think, well for what he's trying to do.
And, you know, the last time that we spoke with him, he had just been a congressman for about a month, maybe, and he talked about specifically that the fact that the people elected him, and he was there to serve the people. And if you read the article in the El Paso Times, he talks about that, you know, he wouldn't want to come back to El Paso and tell people working at Fort Bliss or soldiers or other people with government jobs saying that, you know, something's wrong with our economy and I'm sorry, we had to do this. So he is being nonpartisan and going for what his constituents need.
Yeah, and at the same time, Louis, I guess we'll still have to see how this all plays out. But it looks right now that this could be one of the districts that gets hit simply because of Fort Bliss and the fact that we have so many civilian employees and the possibility that they may be going on the 4-day work schedule and so forth. Again, that may be down the road here for a month or so. But he does serve in a district where that could well take place. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how he addresses that issue, because there are Democrats in Washington who were very much opposed to the legislation, and they wanted and in fact, you know, all the votes against the bill came from Democrats.
You know, you mentioned President Johnson and the fact of his style of negotiating, and if you saw the movie Lincoln, when they're pushing for the 13th Amendment, you show just what a skillful politician he was, and also his people, where you know he could catch you with a story, and you know, like some people have said, not to compare Jerry Jones to Abraham Lincoln, but some people have said that you could walk into a room and dislike Jerry Jones and walk out of there, and all of a sudden he's your best friend. Mm-hmm. And so President Lincoln apparently had those kind of qualities that he could kind of maneuver and talk to people.
Mm-hmm. And you remember, Louis, when the congressman was here and we talked to them and we brought up, you know, how will you run your office? How are you going to get, you know, reach out and get in contact with others? And he pointed out that he was well aware that this has been a pattern and a trend that we've seen in D.C. for a long time, and that is people running on parallel tracks where they don't interact with one another. And so, again, Louis, hopefully we're starting to, you know, bridge some gaps here. That this is something that didn't happen overnight. And it's been, I think, as the congressman pointed out, something that goes back as far as the mid-1990s. So how we get back and bring back that kind of camaraderie and spirit and interaction among the members of Congress, I think, is really a big challenge and hopefully one of the ways that we can, you know, get them to work as they should once again.
And what about as far as, well, you know, this week, as we all know, the president of Venezuela passed away, died of cancer, and we'll talk a little bit about that in just a minute. But what about John Kerry and his new job?
Well, as so much has been said about him, the son of a diplomat, somebody who served in Vietnam, a person who's been in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, addressed the Senate as a veteran of the Vietnam War, that he's pretty well – he has the background, shall we say, to do this. And I think he's now at the point where he's starting to realize that and getting his feet wet and understanding just really what it means to be in that particular position. So he could go overseas before and speak as a U.S. senator, and maybe there'd be some attention paid to him. But now there's a lot of attention that gets paid to him in the words that he uses. And so he has to be much more careful in his wording and context, simply because the light is shining so brightly onto him now as Secretary of State. And hopefully he'll have as good a relationship with the president as Hillary Clinton did. Again, one of the things we've seen is that when we get these appointed heads of state to work well with their president, then things work fairly well for the national interest.
What about I mentioned Hugo Chavez, and of course, you know, there have been a lot of talks, both pro and negative, as far as the United States and Iran. The president, of course, a lot of people have said that that man is just, you know, says many things that he never should have said. So, what's going to happen in Venezuela? And what about funeral arrangements, stuff like that? Would we send a delegation, or would we just kind of send a cable or something?
Up to now, the president has tried to be as diplomatic as possible, saying that it's important to have a good relationship with the people of Venezuela and not try to be provocative or aggressive or acerbic in his tone. That said, Louis, for all that he did, and there's much to be said for how it is that the poor of the country for so long were neglected, and he tried to help them. But also has been pointed out many times, when it's done by one person and they're on almost this soul campaign where they're the focus of everything, and they frankly wreak havoc on the institutions of government and then move on, you wonder who's the successor? How do you maintain this, and what goes on afterward? So that, sure, he did a lot of good for those who need help, but at the same time, he divided the country pretty bitterly. And my sense is that world leaders are looking upon this as a pretty delicate moment to see just what's likely going to happen with the presidential election, and could there be any unrest that comes from this?
And speaking of unrest, we've heard a lot about the new leader of Korea, and also Iran again, and Israel saying, if anybody comes near us or even attempts, we're not going to sit back and take it.
Mm-hmm. And that's long been the position of Israel, that ultimately they have no one to rely on other than themselves, and they take care of themselves first and foremost. And looking at threats, whether they come from Tehran or Pyongyang or wherever, they over time have developed and maintained a pretty aggressive posture toward those who they think are threatening them. And I heard Prime Minister Netanyahu speaking with somebody pointing out that, you know, it's one thing to negotiate and that's all fine and well. But also at the same time, there has to be that threat out there to serve as a counter or at least as a backup to move perhaps diplomacy along.
As far as what we're talking about, you know, economy and you know, job market. You know, we see some people are saying, "Well, you know, the job market is going up. Unemployment has gone down." But as one of our colleagues here, Dr. Tom Fullerton, says, "You know, if people quit looking for jobs, those numbers don't appear. So that appears as if unemployment is down." And recently, Dr. Fullerton hosted a conference here at UTEP along with Dr. Natalicio about the economy and stuff like that. What about the fact that, you know, they talked about Mexico being our number one trading partner, but in last week there was an article in the New York Times that talked about Mexico's trading power with some other countries like Brazil and China and the fact that they're moving up.
Oh, yeah. And Louis, you know, if we can get back to Venezuela. You know, there might have been a time when people thought the future of Latin America rested in the hands of someone like a Fidel Castro, or maybe even now the Hugo Chavez. But when we look and say, well, where really is the future of Latin America? It is Mexico and it is Brazil, and it's these nations that have figured out how to start to work themselves into the market economy much more better, reduce trade barriers, and so forth, so that we're really starting to see the difference there. And there is, I think, any number of demographic studies that go to show that the Mexican population is changing and that families are getting smaller, that women are delaying the time within which they have children. And it's following a pattern that we've seen in the United States for quite some time. And hopefully, you know, that I think that's part of the larger expectation that here's a country that's getting itself together for itself, for its interests, and is really poised to move forward. And we've seen that happening for the past few years. I thought I'd seen, Louis, a study which pointed out the Mexican economy is going to grow about 5% this year. And it just keeps chugging right along as it's made these adjustments. And obviously, we've missed something. Or I'm sure economists like Dr. Fullerton have kept their eye on this very carefully. But with so much attention directed toward you know, drug cartels and so forth, this is a very much overlooked aspect of Mexican society.
And talking about the drug cartels, and I know that you are not an expert, or that's not an area of your expertise, but you do teach Southwest politics, and the fact that Mexico has a new president, as well as you know, we do. Well, we have President Obama got reelected, but in your opinion, and have you discussed this in your classes about Southwest politics and students from Mexico, what do they think about what is happening in Mexico, and what about this new president? How is he doing? Or is it too soon to tell?
I think it's pretty early to tell. It does take a few months in order for this to get settled. Well, interestingly, Louis, from what I can see, and this is just me as the layperson looking around, there doesn't seem to be that much attention directed toward you know, the violence that might have taken place. Whether that's receding, I'm really not sure. But it you know, the what we saw a few years ago, whether it's in Juarez or farther down along the border doesn't seem to be taking place that much yet. And still, Louis, I also have seen that there's still some reluctance on the part of Americans on this side of the border, so close, whether it's here, San Diego, Laredo, about their willingness to cross over. There's still that bit of trepidation by the Americans.
And what about, as you mentioned that, and I'm glad you did, because spring break is just around the corner, and it used to be that students used to flock to Mexico, and now legislatures, lawmakers, teachers, people are warning students, stay away from Mexico.
Yeah, and more than likely they'll go to what, South Bounty Island or somewhere here in the United States. Although there may be some who move farther south, and even though we've heard of violence in places like Acapulco and so forth, there are going to be those. You know, you're young, you're ambitious, you want to get out and see the world, and maybe have a little extra money in your pocket. Well, you know, there are worse places to go than Cancun and so forth.
At first, two candidates for mayor, and that was Mr. Ortega and Robert Cormell. And now there are eight candidates. What does that do to the election? Some people are saying that they may not vote. Some people say, well, I'll just wait till the rerun.
Well, I think there surely will be a runoff, Louis. Simply
a runoff,
because we've got
some
pretty prominent people in there, like Steve Ortega, who is a councilman and has been there for a number of years, along with Gus Haddad, who ran against Mayor Cook in the last cycle of elections, and then Mr. Leeser, who joined at the very last moment and entered the crowd. So we've got three fairly well-known individuals, along with others, and they surely may have their own base of support. But can anybody get 50% plus one? That's probably going to be a pretty daunting thing to do. And my sense is that Mr. Ortega, for a long time, was the odds-on favorite simply because he didn't face, or he didn't seem to face, much of a challenge. But it looks like he will now. And that may not be such a bad thing, regardless of who wins, Louis, because we do have an open seat. And I do think it's pretty important that whomever gets in there at least faces a pretty good challenge in order to get the office.
Past administrations and the fact that, you know, people are surely going to associate Mr. Ortega with past administrations.
That may be. Or who knows how I think an interesting thing is going to be the what happened with the ballpark and that whole decision around it. That because it's so new and because it is so dramatic in its own way, and it's still, a sore note for a number of people. I think it's probably going to be one of the defining issues for these candidates as they try to get as much support as they possibly can. And so in particular, if we go back to our top three candidates, Mr. Ortega, Mr. Leeser, and Mr. Haddad, here they are. If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Haddad had strong support from the business community the last time out. Mr. Leeser surely is going to have that. And then Mr. Ortega was thought to have a fair amount of support, particularly from the downtown business people because of his support for the stadium. Well, how's that all going to play out now? What's going to be done? And another thing I think that's intriguing about this, Louis, with campaigns, and we saw this with Mayor Cook when he first ran and won. He would always show his shoes that had been worn out because he knocked on doors. And this is that old aspect of retail politics. You get out there, you try to engage and talk to people. That's surely something that Mr. Ortega has involved himself in. I'll be interested to see what the other candidates do. Are they willing to get out there and engage with the public that much and take the time that we've seen needs to be invested in order to conduct that kind of an election campaign?
What does the state legislature look at us, and when they look at us and see, you know, what are the way our school districts are being run? And I think Susie Bird is running for a school board position, is she not?
That's right. She'll be in district.
So what do you think is going on down in Austin as far as the schools, education? And I mean, they have other things to think about. But when they look at us, I mean, when they've already sent somebody down here from the Department of Education, Texas Department of Education, to look at us, they may wonder, okay, what's going on in El Paso?
Well, I'm sure they're wondering about that, Louis. And we've seen Commissioner Williams here, and you remember that he has disbanded the board to put in an appointed board. And there was a recent ruling about that by the TEA stating that the commissioner has the authority to take that step. And now we're just waiting for Washington's approval as a result of the Voting Rights Act for them to make that announcement. And it seems to me, Louis, the person who we should watch particularly carefully is Commissioner Williams, given his position as really the chief administrative officer for the TEA. We know that we have some of our legislators have introduced bills in order to try to smooth out things or make things much more open when it comes to school board elections. That, again, has to be worked through the legislative process. Louise, we know there are so many bills that get introduced in so many that just die in committees. And hopefully some of these reforms can go on and have a life and make things better for everybody.
One of the things that people have been wondering, and I've been asked about it, and I don't know, and you may not know, is they say that El Paso seems to have a pattern of hiring a superintendent who will take the city hostage or the district hostage, and what they mean by that is, asking for a certain amount of money, a certain amount of things, and then they leave.
I think that's probably a pattern statewide. In whether it's here or elsewhere, if you've seen the salaries for superintendents, regardless of where they are, have continued to rise. I think here locally, there's going to be a lot more scrutiny that's put onto the school board or school boards as they try to fill these vacancies. It may also be, Louis, and we've seen this with the EPISD hiring effort, that there aren't going to be that many applicants given what's happened here. Maybe they realize that, I'm going to go there, but I'm going to be watched very, very carefully, and I might have my hands tied a little bit more than I want them to be, and that could reduce the numbers of people who, apply for these jobs.
Getting closer to home and our students and our university, of course, there's always a concern about tuition for the students, a concern about not as many student loans or grants available. And then also, of course, what Dr. Natalicio has been working on as we get ready to celebrate our anniversary, and that's tier one
and
status.
All that's coming through, Louis, and we've seen some pretty good news, and that is that at least for now, I think there seems to be a consensus that UTEP should be able to compete for the funds that it was denied during the past legislative session. So that's good there. And then we also recently saw, Louis, that Texas Tech's effort to create an autonomous university, or I should say a medical school here, has received pretty strong support in the Senate. So let's just keep hope. Let's hope those things continue to move forward.
As you mentioned last time, this can neither be good or bad for President Obama, because on one hand, he doesn't have to worry about being reelected. But on the other hand, he wants to also go down and have a legacy.
Absolutely. And I think, Louis, what we've seen as a result of this sequester, his much that has been said about the strategy that he took to this, and that is trying to speak beyond the Congress and get the public mobilized on this and a number of other issues, hasn't really worked out all that well. And I think he's starting to take a step back and starting to, just like what we said at the very outset, get back and engage himself and talk more with the members of Congress. Again, that's a hard thing to do, and it looks like he's doesn't have the kind of personality to do that sort of thing. But on the other hand, it's he's taking baby steps, and as long as we see the Congress also responding, then hopefully we'll see a little better engagement and more and better legislation from them.
Did you happen to hear or listen by any chance to the keynote address that Dr. Ben Carson gave? He is was the head of pediatric neurology at Johns Hopkins University, and he's African-American. And he gave an excellent speech. I mean, it's almost like, gosh, this guy running for president or whatever. And it's interesting because mainstream media didn't seem to pick up on it very much. But some of the other ones like Fox, Hannity, and all that stuff, all of a sudden are talking about, you know, Dr. Carson in 216. And he's going, well, I'm not sure. You know, I just retired from this and I'm looking at this. And then in Chicago, mayor there is having troubles of his own. And he had his sights looked on 216 as well.
Right, Louis. And here we are.
I guess I shouldn't have said sights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, Lou, we've still got a few years to go. And granted, there are names that are going to be put out there, and it's going to be interesting, especially to see what happens with the Republicans and how it is that they try to learn from what happened in 2012. And you can see there's been a lot of soul searching, almost to the point of, it's almost gut-wrenching, is, again, the GOP is trying to figure out what they're going to do. But that's the goal of a political party. One of the things that they need to do is figure out how it is that they can make themselves.
And you had mentioned, pardon me for interrupting, last time that what the Republican Party needed was some kind of Latino, young, Hispanic media darling. And it seems like both parties have sort of embraced Mayor Castro and also Mr. Rubio.
That's true. And then there's also Governor Christie out there as well. We've got Hillary Clinton. As always, Louis, it's going to be interesting. That's for sure.
Well, Greg, thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Dr. Gregory Rocha. Dr. Rocha is the political science department here on campus, and he was talking a little bit about local, state, and national politics. And he will be with us a little bit later on in the next month or two, talking a little bit about the mayoral candidacy.
We're always looking for a good story item, so if there is an issue or a concern in your neck of the woods that you would like the expert staff of Perspectives to look into and then do a show over, why not go ahead and hit the Contact Us button on our website, ktep.org, and make sure your message goes to Louis Signs and Perspectives. Perspectives is a production of KTEP, all rights reserved by the University of Texas at El Paso and by KTEP.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our producer, Dennis Rule. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.